David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to the Marvel Noise Podcast, episode 365. I'm your host, Steve Raker, thinking spring from deep within the bowels of the internationally renowned comic book bunker. It's been a long winter down here with the Moloids. Marvel Noise is the semi-monthly podcast sponsored by nobody. You can stream or download new and archived episodes over at marvelnoise.com. Look for cover galleries, new episodes announcements, and tell us how we're doing on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Marvel Noise is part of the mighty Deliberate Noise network of podcasts, with other fine podcasts including our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, where we talk about the indie comics that we're digging on. Let's get right to it. This episode, Andrew and Kevin will join me for a Bronze Age binge featuring two first appearances. One a supporting character, the other a supernatural squad of soups. Then we'll deliver our 10th installment of New Warriors coverage and introduce Turbo, a character with ties to another Bronze Ager. And finally, Kevin and Andrew will let us in on the exclusive Deadpool anniversary panel. Let's get to it! Time to drop another Bronze Age binge on you, true believers. Andrew and Kevin are here, playing along as I count on them to do. This one actually came out right at the end of 1969, but the cover date is January 1970, so we're making it a Bronze Age binge. It's Fantastic Four number 94 by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, with Kirby Pencils and Joe Sinnott Inks. 15 cents, folks.
Just plain Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and Joe Sinnott. No, Sizzling Sinnott or Jumpin' Jolly Jack Kirby or Silly Sam Rosen lettering.
I've always loved this cover. It's great. It's the Fantastic Four fighting the Frightful Four in front of a haunted-looking mansion.
And Dracula.
Like the wizard is flying out from behind the house with those speed lines that look so cool.
The Sandman costume, though, not so hot.
What? That's something. Did the inker, who is not Joe Sinnott here, think that the Trapster's cowl didn't cover his head? Like, it looks odd.
Yeah, it's a weird.
And then I was thinking, maybe was he supposed to be the Sandman? Shooting sand out at the thing? Because the Sandman also looks like he's just placed in there with a very limited number of lines compared to how full the figures are everywhere else on the cover. Just a thought.
Strange one.
They should have oriented the cover horizontally, Steve. So we could have had a nice big splash.
Kirby scope.
I do love the thing getting pasted in the head like it's fire hose pressure. The issues with another example of why the Kirby Lee Kirby Fantastic Four was so awesome. Family scenes that both reflect and deepen established characterization here as Franklin's name is announced.
And let's hear it for the old days of raising kids when you'd farm them off to somewhere upstate and never see them again. Well, that's how you raise kids, Steve.
First, I should say Franklin's name is after Sue and Johnny's uncle, who died saving the Fantastic Four from a Skrull bomb in Fantastic Four 32.
And he's one of those kids that right away he has a full head of hair. He didn't have to wait a few years for that hair.
He's roots, like the thing is kind of standoffish with Franklin until he hears that the middle name is Benjamin, and then he's all, I mean, it's great. There's a panel with him huddled over and his hand is obscuring his own face,
and Franklin the baby is turned towards him, so you don't see any face really, and Joe Sinnott's got the like manga lines shooting out from the back, and it just is, it's like the perfect panel of showing how emotionally affected he is. You know, he's like, nobody ever named me nothing after me, you know, it makes me feel like I'm a family instead of a freak show. Great stuff. And as Andrew said, Fantastic Four is taking baby Franklin upstate to meet his new nanny, like babysitter, that they will use when they're going on adventures and stuff. But the place is so creepy that the plot quickly becomes likened to like the old spend the night in a haunted mansion kind of scenario.
I mean, I like the dragon statue outside and everything.
Oh man, the decorations and paintings on the walls and accoutrements are really fun. Jack Kirby haunted house stuff.
Except the cat never really looks like a house cat.
There might be a reason for that.
Looks like an Egyptian, you know, sculpture or something. But surprise, the Frightful Four have re-recruited Medusa, and they've bugged the Baxter building, so they know what's happening, and they know the location of where they're traveling to in upstate New York, and they've gotten there first and are laying in wait.
Should Sandman be smoking, really?
The Fantastic Four meet Agatha Harkness for the first time.
Look at that eyeshadow or black eyes. I'm not quite sure what that is.
I think it's just like liver spots, like aging.
Oh.
She's come out of retirement just for them because she's heard of their little group. I love that.
I mean, they're world famous.
The team gets led to their shared rooms, and you get to see all the furniture in the hallways and stuff. It's great. The decor.
So when they see the Frightful Four, are they going to run up and down the hallways and then go in one room, then run out of that room, go in another room?
That'd be awesome.
It must take a lot of work to keep that place clean, is all I was thinking, with all the knickknacks and statues and paintings and everything.
The Thing finds a secret passage in his and Johnny's room and gets gravity disked by the Wizard and the Sandman. And even if they've gotten there first and are lying in wait, it's still a bit of a stretch that, like, they found the secret passage and are hiding there, you know what I mean? But whatever. The Trapster then glues the door shut to Reed and Sue's room, and he's really thinking now, this is some good Pastepot Pete here.
Well, he glued everything.
Including Reed's hands, knowing that he would stretch under the door and try to reach up and unlock the door. And then he glues that flat against the door, too.
Yeah, but see, Reed could stretch the rest of him out and then have him extended like 300 feet long. And that was like when the Sandman takes out the torch. Because, you know, that's how you put out fire with sand.
Yeah.
Sure. Just as the Wizard declares victory, Medusa betrays them, and it's just like that issue of Marvel Superheroes that we talked about a few months ago on Marvel Noise episode 360. It's great fun watching Medusa cleaning house with the rest of the team here, but ultimately they get the better of her and paste her immobile.
But it's green in this world, too. Like, it's interesting, green paste.
That's special paste.
Then the Frightful, well, now three, meet Agatha and her cat, Ebony.
This reminds me of, like the panthers that turn into something. Like, the cat is the same type of thing.
Oh, yeah. It turns into a huge predator-sized cat. And then something even more, and chases the Wizard right out the second-story window. And then the Sandman is ever so slowly turned into rock.
The Thing? He's becoming the Thing?
And the Trapster? He pretty much poops his pants when he's faced with this shadow demon thing.
I think you mean he traps his pants.
Does he have a trapdoor?
This demon thing grabs him. Well, it's a thing at least. It's the Thing. But he saw it as something more. The Fantastic Four have escaped their rooms and they race to find Agatha and Franklin, and she is so chill, she's like, hey, don't wake the baby. They figure, well, I guess we picked the right sitter after all. And then this is one of my favorite ending sequences. The thing sees a Salem-related book on the table there in Agatha's room and puts two and two together, which Agatha realizes, and she gets this, like, mischievous grin on her face and says, you know, like, what's the matter? You see a witch or something, you know? And the last panel is him fleeing down that hallway that Kevin mentioned before, but his feet aren't even touching the floor. He's flying at it. He's totally spooked, and everything about that panel and the dialogue tells you.
Yeah. Well, I like also, this is a fun one, because they don't wear their pajamas in the whole thing. They went down in their regular tog, so Reed is there at night in his, like, white muscle t-shirt and pants. That's a new look for him. I like him as, like, the working man, Reed Richards.
That's quite a next panel, too. It says, next, tomorrow, World War III. And I'm just like, what?
Well, they got to get serious after their obvious lighthearted tones that flowed through this. I mean, this issue has, like, the family heartwarming kinds of stuff. It has suspense and danger. It's got the spooky vibes. And then, like, comedy, too. Bravo, Jack and Stan. It's a fun issue.
Yeah, I've actually busted out the old copies of this thing so I could see. Right, it was right in the highlight of the controversial decision that Marvel was going to get rid of subplots. I think it was never really going to happen. But this way they could announce that they're keeping all the subplots thanks to all the angry letters they've received in Stan's soapbox and in the letter column. You can read all the fun stuff. Of course, now I'm so cynical. I'm like, how many of these letters are real?
Yep. All right, the next issue that I have laying in wait here. All right, the next issue on tap is Marvel Premiere number 28, which hit the stands at the very end of 1975 and is the first and only appearance for quite some time of the Legion of Monsters.
Oh, this looks legendary, which is Ghost Rider. All stay back, even we don't stand a chance against that.
And who is we?
Our mischievous man thing. Our I don't have any good phrase for Morbius. Our woolly werewolf by night.
That's a pretty good foursome there. Like, Marvel Premiere was like a launching platform for different ideas and ways for them to touch on characters that didn't have their own titles. It was essentially like pilot arcs and one-shots, this being a one-shot written by Bill Mantlow with art by Frank Robbins and Steve Gann.
Frank Robbins.
Largely a launching point for not well-thought-out ideas, I would suggest. As everyone knows, I like Frank Robbins, but his Ghost Rider, the flames end up looking like hair.
Yeah,
so it looks like he has a receding hairline.
He always did that look on him.
But I liked his torch, though. Like, when he does the all-over flame, it works okay. And I like his humans, even though they all kind of have a very expressive faces and everything. I'm a fan of the Robbins man. But I don't like the, as we've talked about, the real eyes in the Ghost Rider, always weird too. So as Ghost Rider, I'm kind of keep him as Johnny Blaze. He looks better that way.
Although this is the Ghost Rider that is Johnny Blaze's persona while he's the Ghost Rider, right? Like, he's not talking sinister or cryptically or anything like that. He's like, oh gosh, gee, you know? And also, this cover isn't a Frank Robbins cover. It's a Nick Carty cover.
Mm.
This is the only Marvel color comic that Nick Carty ever did the cover for.
Wow.
He did some covers for some of the black and white Marvel magazines, but this is the only comic. Pretty wild.
I like Nick Carty.
Me too.
They should have had a lady hero on it. He does such well, better than, you know, some topless werewolf man.
The first thing I thought when I flipped this issue open, and it is available on Marvel Unlimited digital service, is, uh-oh, Andrew, a rogue mountain has risen out of the earth in L.A. right through Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, no. And that's not going
to
be good.
And then back to the cover, that's now in context. That's the mountain in the background with the cars, like, driving into it and wrecking themselves. How funny is that? It's cars smashing into the mountain in the road.
One thing I also I'm glad we break up our Bronze Age binges, because the use of writing these things in the second person really at some point kind of it's better in limited doses. So
yeah,
we get to be each of the monsters it's written in the thing.
They overdo it with the monster books too, using that strategy, you know. I love the Don Martin-esque sandaled feet that Robbins and Gann drew in the This Ain't No Movie panel.
What it's like, Steve. That's just what it's like.
Even Johnny Blaze is caught in this unnatural catastrophe, so he is determined to investigate as the Ghost Rider. And I like how he talks to his skull cycle. He's like, "To me, my board."
Oh no, don't tell me it has a name too.
Meanwhile, Morbius, the sort of vampire, is hunting nearby, and he lunges at his prey, and it turns out to be the werewolf by night. Always have to say it that way, like, Murder, She Wrote.
Is that like Morbius, the living vampire?
All I ever think when you say that, Steve, is that young Frankenstein werewolf, their wolf. Their castle.
So Morbius and the werewolf tussle, but when the mountain rises nearby, they go to investigate. Yeah, Morbius is a scientist after all, you know?
Well, maybe there'll be lots of blood in the mountain, Steve.
Blood mountain.
And to round out the cast, in the Florida Everglades, the murky man thing is interrupted from toying with humans by a portal with a vision of that weird mountain appearing. So he advances. This fearsome foursome of ours rendezvous on the mountain slope in the presence of a golden, like, Napoleon Alexander the Great type atop a just as golden horse, who introduces himself as the Starseed.
What?
A great spread. I love all the gold. Like, no, a little bit of orange to kind of offset for the tackle on the horse.
Yeah.
And some of his supplies. It really works really well. And then just the only white are the horse's teeth. Like, the pupils are all maybe a lighter shade of yellow. Yeah, just I think it's a great image of horses. Steam coming, a little bit of sweat on its brow. Just very, very good. And we just have the backs of our heroes as we see this guy with his hand upraised, rearing back the horse.
Yeah, and the flames seem to have moved onto the front of Ghost Rider's head, since we're seeing it from the back now instead of the back of his head. Strange.
And he has a receding flame line.
Apparently.
The Starseed is all, "Welcome to my hill," and everything, and he tells the story of the mountain and his people. They were a less violent sect of early man. They moved from the chaos of the cave people to this mountain and thrived and built a peaceful society until the aliens came. And oh, what aliens they were.
Yeah.
Like proper, not just like green humanoid aliens, but like real, like snaky with tentacles and weird eyes and antenna.
The aliens kill all the human leaders.
I guess all humans.
I guess they misinterpreted the old high five. And they knock the people all off the mountain, and then using large tongs, they physically stole the mountain.
It's tough to be a hippie caveman, Steve.
Mm-hmm. And some people, though, they lived in the caves of the mountain, not on the mountain. they survived the trip, even though the mountain was transported through the vacuum of space.
Wow.
Well, I presume that the aliens sealed it so that all the stuff wouldn't get... Like, that part, I presume much. I feel like that's a pretty safe guess. They don't want their valuable mountain getting damaged.
Well, all right, Mr. Transit. Presumption. Why is... They never even mention why they came and took this mountain or anything.
Yeah, but they're not gonna... How is he gonna... He doesn't speak their language. They basically just waited till the guys were sleeping, killed them, and stole their tech.
There's a Vibranian mound right on in South Africa they could have stolen. That would have made sense. Not so much. So
who are we to judge the mysterious ways of aliens, Steve? That's why they're aliens. We can't figure them out.
The people in the caves who survived the space travel and the alien abduction evolved over eons, but this Starseed character is the last one of his people. But he's come back home and brought his mountain with him.
Just putting it back where it belongs, Steve. You just built that your dumb city underneath it.
Then, with introductions and intentions out of the way, the werewolf attacks, like, much to the group's surprise. They're like, wait. And he's like, wow. But that's not all. Morbius
is not with us.
Morbius's bloodlust drives him to attack Starseed too. He's like, I gotta have a taste of this guy. The Ghost Rider's just watching this, and he smells the stinky swamp as the man thing gets too close, and he like stumbles backwards, afraid, tripping over his skull cycle.
Whoa.
And I thought that was a nice touch. I never thought that, yeah, he would stink pretty bad.
He must, like, if the Ghost Rider can smell him without a nose and through the fire.
They don't play up, yeah, a lot of the sensory, like the smelling in comics a lot. And I was like, oh, that's a clever way to remind us that they occupy three-dimensional space.
Also, I love the obligatory / customary Frank Robbins looking way too far over the shoulder pose as the Ghost Rider rides away from the man thing to escape him. That, when I think of Frank Robbins, I think of that pose right there.
I was thinking earlier, the werewolf guy had like this kung fu pose with one arm kind of bent with the fist up and some kind of claw.
That's what it is with Robbins. It's like he's got an action figure that's all of a sudden got more points of articulation, and he decides, I'm going to bend every one of them. The hip twists this way. The upper torso twists this way. The arm twists that way. The head twists this way. And he's doing them all opposite of each other, right?
Yeah,
so left, right, left, right. And the person's like, oh, going to need therapy. Funny.
Well, they're superheroes, Steve. They can handle it. He's a werewolf, for criminy's sake.
The werewolf unseats the Starseed from his mount and takes him right down to the ground. So now both Morbius and the werewolf can just pounce on the golden guy with gusto. The Ghost Rider, like, clears them off with some hellfire balls. But the Starseed is injured, and he's never been hurt like that before. He's kind of afraid. And what knows fear burns at the Man-Thing's touch.
Go, Man-Thing.
These guys really do a number on this guy who just was like, you know.
Not much of a debut for a superhero team. More like a super villain team.
I finally made it home. This guy's traveled across the eons, and like, they just destroy him one after the other. The Starseed is laying there dying, but he lets them know that if only they would have given him a chance, he could have cured them all. He could have fixed Michael Morbius's vampirism. He could have released Johnny Blaze from his curse, turned the man thing back to Ted Silas, and made Jack Russell. He could have given him a better name.
Couldn't have given him a worse name, Steve.
If only they weren't such violent killers. And as the Ghost Rider says, what a bummer. He sums it up perfectly. And that's how the first team up of the Legion of Monsters ends.
The last panel, it looks like Ghost Rider's walking down the street like the TV series Hulk with his bike.
Yep, his bike is trashed.
Sad music plays.
He's got to, like, walk to the nearest station, and you know what Sunset Boulevard is like. You got to walk for miles before you get a good gas station.
Yeah, not really a big gas station place, but I like how the mountain's still there, though.
Yeah. Someone going to move this thing?
Yeah.
You see a damage control guy with a mop.
Hey, they did their job, Steve, which was killing the weird human returning to Earth.
Stop him before he does something benevolent.
All right, Marvel Noise listeners, it's that time again.
Yay.
We're back. We're back. We are Andrew the Alley Rabbit, WRX Kevin, Super Steve, with our 10th installment of covering the New Warriors, way back from when they were the Old Warriors.
You should call me Night Kev instead, because I'm from the Heroes Reborn universe.
Long-time Marvel Noise listeners will know we did a similar sort of deep dive with the Thunderbolts. And way back when Kevin suggested we do something similar, I had purchased the New Warriors Omnibus. And in episode 332 from June of 2019, we launched discussing their first appearances in Thor 411 and 412 and the series. We follow a similar trail to the Thunderbolts one, and that is Kevin is our sort of, he sometimes is a fan, sometimes isn't. I'm kind of the new guy to the series with some limited reading, and Steve is the guy that only read the good issues.
Two issues.
And we haven't gotten to him yet.
Oh, wow.
Two issues so far.
as is our tradition, normally we sort of give an indication of where we had left off because we had a really complicated annual crossover situation last time and the big 25th anniversary blowout. So, Kevin, what is our New Warriors team?
All right. Our New Warriors team is Night Thrasher, Dwayne, kind of on sabbatical. He has a skateboard, a gun. His parents were killed in the alley. There were some pearls. I mean, never mind that. Speedball, our Robbie, our bouncing bundle of joy. Namorita, our Atlantean. She wears a lot of different swimsuits. Firestar, Angelica, our mutant with the radiation powers. Nova, Richard, with the, he brings a little of the cosmic. Silhouette, our shadow teleporter. Rage, apparently he needs a new costume. I kind of understand why he went back to his regular, I don't know if he could say regular, but his original costume and like the modern stuff now, because in here, like he created the original himself, and then someone's giving him his, what I think of as his regular costume. Like his original, it didn't imprint on me, but now the costume he's getting here, this is the one I recognize him with.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Hey, Night Thrasher's kind of like that. Like, I know the original, and then he keeps on upgrading it. And then you have Marvel Boy, who is sabbatical. I don't know. He went to jail after that little bit of a weird trial there. But, I mean, he did kill his father, so...
He was asking for it.
He's going to go to jail. Whether he believes in the justice system. I mean, that kind of plays into... I'm not going to spoil it, but anyhow.
It's got the cool Hawkeye scar.
That's pretty much where we are with this epilogue issue to a 25th issue blowout Andrew was mentioning.
Well... we're in the summer of 92, and I'm feeling like there's a bit of a, and this might be my own backwards prejudice, but I feel like they're starting to do what they were doing with some of the X books, and that is keeping like sub teams almost going.
Yep.
Because we have Thrasher split off, And now some of the other ones are going and being. So even though it's within the context currently of one title, we're kind of getting not just running sublines, but entire running teams. Yeah. And I lay that at the feet of, if memory serves, I'm getting out of comics now for financial reasons. But my last recollection were things were getting pretty dense continuity-wise, and a lot of things were happening and crossovers and everything, and it just wasn't fit for a poor man to try and keep up.
With the New Warriors trying to be a collection of, you know, like the next generation-y teen heroes in some way, it was a method just like they used in the X-books to bring in new characters or to bring in familiar characters for a little while and get to see them operating as part of the team before they might go back off to their own book or to some other thing. You know what I mean? It lets cast rotate a little bit. They're kind of putting Vance Astro on a, you know, on a shelf for a little while, and Night Thrasher on a shelf for a little bit, and gives them an opportunity even to tell miniseries stories if they want, solo tales with the characters as they have stepped away from the team.
They're kind of showing restraint that there hasn't been. Like, sure, they've crossed over in annuals, but this is really where the period where they start expanding, like, the franchise. And they have all the miniseries, and then you start getting these characters going ongoing series. Like, they've been successful, but they haven't really done a lot of extra things.
This is the 90s, so, though.
Yeah, it is. It is. And 26 is one of those issues that I definitely really remember. I guess this is the one I really remember as reading the book. That's probably why, like, it stuck with me. Like, I read a lot of the other stuff in back issues and everything, and it more like out of order. And this is where I read it all in order. and it's what's weird too is you have Derek Robertson on the artwork, and if you were to ask me, like, 10 years later, like, who are the guys that are on my favorite books, like, I wouldn't remember who he is. And then, like, nowadays I'd be like, oh, I don't know, some guy that does stuff like The Boys or something. But I'm like, no, it's like New Warriors, one of my favorite things. As Andrew would say, fake fan, he doesn't remember the artist, but he knows the art was good.
How great are some of the faces in here, too, where it's like, oh, that's totally a boy's face, and, you know, a demented face, laughing, all the twit. My only complaint is that he hasn't figured out how to draw Nova's helmet large enough to actually fit over his head. It looks like it's really tight. Issue. Like, if Nova smiled, it doesn't look like there'd even be room for his cheeks to move.
And so that's what I like, too, is, like, discovering, like, some book I read back then and I didn't realize who the artist was. Like, I sort of knew, but I didn't know. So that's always exciting.
Even when we were talking about going back and reading these books, and I was like, oh yeah, I can't wait till we get to the Derek Robertson issues. And you were like, Derek Robertson?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, really? Those was... That's the stuff I started liking.
So it's just funny that I'm like, I find I'm a big fan of artists like that I never knew I was a big fan of. It's so weird.
Well, as Kevin hinted, this is the first debut of Derek Robertson on the book, and previously it had been Bagley. He's still doing covers, and Larry Malstead is the inker here. He inked a lot. We had a few other inkers, but he was the main one, and Fabian is still writing. This represents the last issue in the omnibus. Now, they foolishly put the annual crossover we did last time after this issue, but what do they know? They also have some interesting back matter, but Kevin said if I talked about it, he would quit the show. So,
to keep him on the show,
I will refuse to acknowledge its existence, except between you and me, listeners. It's pretty interesting stuff if you like that sort of thing. Yeah, it fills out the omnibus.
Buy the new printing of the omnibus.
The other thing I like is, and I only noticed this because when we go to the next issues, I will be going back to the trade, is I forget the omnibus is a little bit bigger. Not ostentatiously so, but when you're transition, you do notice the pages kind of shrink down a little, which is always a you know, bit of a sad moment for me. But as Kevin says, this is kind of our filler. Vance is going to prison. He's going to the vault with the guardsmen.
Cover too.
Yeah, Bagley's
back. Is Marvel really going to prison? Not if the New Warriors have anything to say about it. And then they're totally fighting some guardsmen.
Yes. So, and then it turns out we have a teaser beginning of Marvel Boy Vance fighting some guardsmen, but it was just some training to have fun on the way to jail, like you do, you know.
I've never been to prison. So accommodating.
But I assume you do. But it gets us a chance to, as Steve said, see some of those faces Robertson is known with. And
you allowed to do that when you're the guardsman, when you're like transporting a perp and just like let him out and fight him a little bit? And then, like, what if he did win against them and then like ran off? Like,
well, he did. I believe he did actually win the fight down to a bluff, but.
But that, Steve, they're so tired of just fighting themselves. They need some like different combat training.
They get worn out getting beat up by mandroids every.
I'm getting exhausted looking at all these feet in this issue. I...
Well, then my favorite thing has to be he starts putting weird cameos in. If you guys are familiar with the sitcom The Young Ones, they make a cameo appearance in the page after this that has Hercules punching Rage.
Yep.
In the top corner, you see all four of them.
Oh.
Like, I wonder if that was Fabian or that was Derek.
Robertson.
Like,
yeah.
I think it's Robertson because we didn't. Yeah. I didn't notice those kinds of things with Bagley on the book. But yeah, Rage is receiving the gift to catch people up who missed the last one. Rage decided instead of he wanting to be an Avenger, he would steal Avenger stuff for his new warrior friends he just met. Showing a lack of judgment and character. But basically this ends him with, he gets kicked out of the group. But the one thing I really appreciate with Robertson is he actually makes the Hercules not just like a big muscular dude, but like a big, like he dwarfs over the Black Knight in a way that I really like. Like, oh, I like when these characters have different scale and isn't just a muscly guy.
Agreed.
But this Avengers lineup. So, Steve, you're back into comics now, summer of 92.
Yep.
I think you're not reading New Warriors yet.
Right.
How do you feel about this Avengers lineup, the Rage, Crystal, Vision?
Rage was an experiment that didn't last, thankfully, and was a little bit of a leftover from the previous creative team on the book. But this is right with the beginning of the Bob Harris, Steve Epting stuff with Crystal on the team and the Black Knight coming back into the fold and it really becoming a Black Knight story arc over time. Cersei's on the team.
Doesn't he go crazy from the sword or something, Steve?
No, at some point, but he... You know, he has the lightsaber sword for a while, even in his, he becomes the leader. I mean, this is like Flakjack Avengers time. And it was good stuff. They had that whole thing with the Proctor, the different villains. They had the big X-Men crossover with the granddaughter of Crystal and Quicksilver and Magneto having that big quadriangle. I really liked that run on the Avengers. It was one of the times where the Avengers felt like it was a monthly serial that was engaging, that made you want to know what was going to happen next, because the arcs, there was an oversweeping bigger arcs, and I like the Black Knight. It's fun to have a good Black Knight story.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. And I know you're a big Jacket fan, Steve, so glad to see stylistically. And for WandaVision fans, this is a White Vision era. So,
sure is.
You know, if you want to catch up on stories that have nothing whatsoever to do with the TV show, but well, so Rage gets his walking papers and has his duffel bag over his shoulder, and we start to see they're going to work that Robbie, aka Speedball, and Rage are going to end up being buddies.
Yep.
And so, Robbie got him a new outfit, which we do not get to see.
Not yet. And since he got kicked out of the Avengers, he's perfect New Warriors material.
Yeah, I that whole, it just was so unbelievable. The, oh, I'm an Avenger. Hey, I met you guys twice. Like, why don't I steal stuff for you?
I like them as buddies, too. That's a good dynamic, the two of them. And it does seem natural. I mean, it's right up there as a Wonder Man, Beast, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, even a Ben and Johnny type dynamic.
But then we go to the heavy hitter squad, Nova Namorita Firestar group.
Yeah. Did Namorita really need to hack into her own computers, though?
Well, it's weird because it is a time of quick change. They've run around Dwayne's backstory, but they also changed hers. Remember, she was a student when this whole thing started.
Yeah.
And now she runs the Oracle company due to the mysterious disappearance of Namor. I blame John Byrne going to DC, Steve.
You know, we missed a lot of her appearances and cameo appearances in that book.
Yeah. I mean, she finished, it's a big change in her status quo. And for the younger listeners out there, what she's looking at is something called a roadmap, which, quaintly enough, used to be a printout of Google Maps that you would have. And they would, but I like this, like these, first of all, they all fly, which is handy, and they're all highly powered, so it's a nice heavy hitter. And Robertson gets a nice half page of the, like, full-on face of them looking serious and determined to shut down the Winnebago that the Guardians are transporting Vance in.
Yeah, because they're not going to let him go to jail. No, like he got framed in quotes. And they're going to break him out.
My favorite page in this whole comic is this page of them breaking him out, broken into three panels, with the top one showing Firestar's butt and their fists with the, she's like powering up, you know, and the two of them landing in front of the doors of the vault vehicle, and then the second panel, they're ripping the doors off, and I love Nova's pose. He really looks like he's like bearing the weight and pulling back, and the guardsman looks as cool as a guardsman can look, waiting inside, and then Firestar doing the blast that she was powering up in the first panel and the third panel into that guardsman who was waiting there. It was great. Great timing conveyed, and the figure work is really pleasing.
Yeah, I like how he does that little shaky black outline of the panel in the middle.
Yeah, I agree. I'm enjoying this. Is a fun, I mean, I like Bagley too, but this is a fun mix up of kind of a different pacing. I feel like maybe one or two less panels per page in general.
I think so.
Gives them a little bit more room for the faces to come through, but super clear storytelling, like just top-notch work. The guardsmen are like, okay, you know, we have three, we got to take these clowns down to Winnebago Town or whatever they say, and they mix it up with the Guardians. Strange enough, the Guardians are more resistance than I would have given them credit for. I remember them being slightly above like a bunch of henchmen for Doc Ock or something. The Master Planner. Some of those bozos.
I mean, I guess they've been working out.
But Vance freezes them, telekinet, freezes everybody. Because he's got the power. He's got the touch. And when Namorita says, we're here to help you, Vance, to free you. Did it ever occur to any of you that I don't want to be free?
Mm. Oh, no, he wants to live out his sentence.
You're going to break somebody out, you probably should ask them.
Yeah, that might be important. And then we have our little subplot here, too.
Classic comics, that leaves it on the page turn. Well done. And it's Dwayne in silhouette, chit-chatting, and she's talking about how they're going to get her a proper outfit so she doesn't... Her power allows her to transport through shadows, but she has to be naked. So, you know, she doesn't like that anymore. So, and he's souping up. He's got a 90s his outfit. He's like, this thing does not have enough pouches, armor, weapons, and everything. I'm going to get laughed out of comics. So he's working on that. With some cool, like, diagram back on the screen. I'm less into all joking and kidding on that aside. I like a more streamlined, street-level character. I don't need him to be, like, Junior War Machine, but I get it. It's the 90s. You guys want your comics extreme.
The funny thing is, they've done a Marvel Legends of Night Thrasher, and it was rather simpler and easier for them to do, but if they did this complicated design, I would probably get that one too.
Well, considering you bought the first one, I'm not sure you're selling them they need to.
Well,
it's you're supposed to say, I would never buy that outfit. Make the real one, Hasbro.
I mean, the first one, they're probably like, yeah, this is the one people remember, the original, and it's easier for us to do. You know, they're going to have to spend more money to, like, tool up this one with all the little doodads on it.
Yeah, there goes your budget. But that leads us right to back to our scene of Namorita. And good character work here. We're seeing that she goes by, she's always been impetuous and does what she thinks the right thing is. And doesn't give a hang for the law. And destroys some... I hope that's not some ancient 300-year-old redwood that she just destroyed in a fit of rage.
It's not super thick, but thick enough, I guess.
But Vance is like, hey, I did the crime. I gotta do the time.
Yep. This is another thing. If this happened nowadays, me as a reader would be like, oh no, is he leaving the book? Are they ever gonna get back to him? Like, I'd be worried about different things. Back then, like, I never had a thought of all those things. I was just like, hey, this is the story. I'll just see where this goes. Like, I would never be concerned about, oh, no, will the book get canceled or whatever. Like, I'm just, it's in that era of, hey, your book can just go on for a while. Maybe if he's serving 2 years out, he'll be back in the book in 2 years. Who knows if they're playing real time.
Oh, go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I like that the guardsmen look the other way so that Firestar and Vance can get a few minutes to walk out into the woods and say their goodbyes.
Yeah, it was a nice moment. Firestar offers him a going-away present, which he says, no, not like this. Steve, you're supposed to do the not like this.
She's hot.
But it doesn't matter. He's going to wait till they're married and not when he's on his way to prison in the woods. All the guards look the other way.
Wait till they retcon that scar off your face.
So when he gets back, they're fixing the doors, which is nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, they go on. And so, like I said, for the omnibus, we've come to the end. It's fun. I mean, this is one of those ones I paid some pittance for relative to its MSRP, but I'm glad we got to it. I think these are fun. I'm transitioning to the trade, but like I said, I'm sad to see the slightly larger page size go away, which I wouldn't even notice if you're on trade to start with. Kevin, are you issues or Marvel Unlimited so far?
I didn't really have time to dig out the issues for these, so I just went straight to the Unlimited. I don't have the... Like, I was happy to see the trade and everything, but I was like, I don't know if... I mean, it was a higher consideration than the Thunderbolts trades, because I was just like...
Yeah, because you don't like Thunderbolts.
Trade.
Yeah, I understand, Kevin. Believe me.
Thunderbolts, it was like Omnibus or Bust.
Omnibust.
So... if you're following at home, there's the Darkness and Light trade, which picks up exactly where the omnibus let off. This is from, I don't know, about a decade ago, I'm going to guess. Ooh, who can read that print? So it was nice to have the trans. I assume at some point, if the sales were good, they would continue doing this and digitizing. But these are all going to be on the Unlimited, because obviously to clean them up for this, they put them on. And 27 shoots us right into another awesome crossover event. And I believe we've had this one before, because this is where the evil dimension, I don't remember the name of where these doppelganger characters come from. But our universe is flooded with doppelgangers.
It's the wildest warrior story ever. An Infinity War crossover. Really a tie-in. It's not... I mean, I'll do the nitpick type of thing. I'm like, it's a tie-in. It's not really... it's not an essential part of a full breakfast.
No,
you did demand it, but you got it anyways. Dark Speedball, thanks.
Yeah, so basically this is, like I said, the extended impacts here is the use of the doppelganger characters and the heroes come together. I don't need a synopsis, but gentlemen, thoughts on the Infinity War?
This was one of my first crossover things, and where I used it to sample titles, and I was like all in. I was like, ooh, all these. It's part of that thing where all the characters come together in one room, or then all this cool stuff is going on all over, and you're like, oh, I want to be involved in this, and I have extra money, and I want to buy extra books.
It's the sequel to the Infinity War or Infinity Gauntlet, for crying out loud. Then that was the story that was the end cap to the story that brought me back into comics after being out for a half a decade, with Starlin coming back to write Silver Surfer. The thing that mattered to this issue is that doppelgangers of the heroes, evil alien-like doppelgangers, were attacking the heroes and trying to replace them. So that let each creative team normally working on the book just add that threat in to one of their issues and deal with it however they wanted to deal with it. The other aspect of the Infinity War that matters here is there is a big turning point scene where all of the heroes gather together in the Baxter building to plan their next move. And the Baxter building is decimated. It blows up.
Yeah.
So part of that is referenced here as they're all getting together to talk with the other heroes.
I mean, it would be fun to read Infinity War sometime again.
Anytime you want, man. I'll always read Starlin.
Yeah.
Well, I hope the FF didn't bother paying their back rent then.
What about all the... Do they still have the people with the apartments in the... wonder how they enjoyed that.
So we have... it's our continuing team of Derek Roberts and Malstott. Fun team. And Fabian, of course. I like that we're still in an era of people sticking to books. I mean, there's fill-in here and there, but it's nice to see the continuity. Because he does a fun... Speedball is buying pizzas for the collection of heroes. Seems a poor choice. There's no way those pizzas are not completely scrambled. And then he runs across Rage fighting one of those doppelgangers. But in this instance, Speedball, because he's not very smart, attacks the doppelganger because we're getting to see Rage's new outfit. I kind of was hoping we'd get a bigger wabam for the outfit, you know, because this is our debut of it. But I get you want to serve the story and not sell original art pages. But still, you know, you could give us the full thing, right?
So the guy with the red eyes is our Rage?
No.
Like, you can't really tell instantly who is who, because I thought he's supposed to have the Rage on the back.
It's so funny because I'm so used to seeing Robertson's art in the Boys universe that this Rage costume and every design of every new character hereafter that Robertson draws totally looks like it's something out of the Boys, and it's like some, you know, Boys universe version of what a superhero costume should be. But really it's because it's the excesses of the 90s, you know, comic styles and everything. I mean, this looks like it's something between, you know, who is the decathlon D-Man derivative who was in the Avengers for a while there with the Busick Perez? Looks a little bit like that guy, or Wonder Man's first costume. It's right up there with those, I think. It's so funny. The shoulder pads and the helmet.
Yeah, I just feel like we could get more of a full take it in a little bit and see. But yeah, you're right. It's much more armored, kind of like a low-rank gladiator. Yeah. Not a lot of bells and whistles, but...
How about the diagonal neckline? The diagonal neckline with the lapel folded down.
Once he gets the spikes, that'll be the definitive
So basically, Robbie apologizes. Rage realizes he needs to accept his doppelganger and eat him. So he absorbs him. But which one took control, Steve? Is it Rage or Weird Rage? Although it's our Rage from the sense of the outfit didn't change. But still, that leads us to the beautiful double-page spread of all the heroes meeting. Oh, that would be a nice piece of artwork.
It just hit me. Triathlon, that was that Avengers name.
Or Triathlon.
And Nova's being a jerk about getting selected by Cap to go into deep space, but Nova in deep space, maybe he doesn't want to volunteer to set that. He's going to have some hard living in space in the future.
Yeah.
But it's mostly Robbie, and Robertson has a lot of fun. Lots of the bouncing balls for speedball and excitement, dynamic page composition. But basically, Robbie's dad is in law enforcement and doesn't like superheroes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that's the old Captain Stacy conundrum.
Sure.
And there's now an evil speedball, running around. So Speedball has to start using his powers in more ingenious ways to make sure that when there's ricochets and the cops are trying to stop him, he doesn't hurt them.
He just needs his cap to help him out.
Just to use the Schwartz.
Exactly. And your two friends in the Winnebago. Meanwhile, Rage is acting even angrier in a very 90s way. He beats up a bunch of bad guys and the crowd eggs him on. Which seems pretty, I don't know.
That looks painful. He puts that one guy, I'm not sure if the guy's head goes through the windshield or not, but it looks pretty bad.
And then Dark Speedball is tracked down Robbie's mom, and there is no confusing which one is Speedball. That's why you're right. Like, the Dark Rage guy was a little bit smarter to be more subdued. This guy's got like Venom style teeth and red hair instead of blonde, and the outfit's colored differently. But yeah, you want to see bubbles against bubbles. And Robbie also accepts it by, you know, blasting him away. But did he really get rid of him?
I guess we'll never know.
And then again, we have a nice moment with the two of them. And I always like this too, like the clue, like we're going to establish that Rage generally comes from a hard upbringing without a lot of spare money, and Robbie, the rich suburban kid, borrows money off of them, which is totally right. We've all had that well-heeled friend when we were younger who was like thoughtlessly like dropping cash and borrow money, doing this, not realizing that it's hard come by for some. But yeah, they have a nice moment about facing their evil doppelgangers. And I think this is about the best you could do for a tie-in without letting it submarine your book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought that scene of him giving the $5 to, or the $10 to Speedball was countered the scene earlier in the issue, right after he absorbs the doppelganger, where he asks himself, is this the right way to help people? And then that comes around to fruition when then he gives Robbie $10 for pizza. No, that's the way to help people. Hero. Nah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think giving some rich kid a bunch of money is the way to help people, Steve. But like I said, they did what they had to do and the best way they can. It has to be not easy to get your title kind of submarine for a hot minute for some flavor of the summer month.
Event. Think about it from the event writer's perspective, though. That's a pretty big freedom of storytelling. You know, that's a pretty good device to put out there. Like, hey, you just have an evil version of your character, whichever one you want. You know what I mean? It could be one of your co-stars. It could be the main guy. It could be whatever. The bad guy. It could be the Kingpin having to deal with his doppelganger. You know, whatever.
Oh, y'all remember Dark Aunt May. That was a gruesome ending when Spider-Man was forced to kill her. But we're not talking about that title. We're talking about New Warriors, which leads us to what I assume is going to be Super Steve's favorite issue, number 28.
Oh, can I give my story of this character, too?
True. Go for it.
Much like Star-Lord, I thought this was a new character. Which is kind of funny, because what do I know, right?
What new character are you speaking of?
Turbo. So I'm just like, oh, this is a decent new character. Oh, and then also Cardinal, who has ties to some other things we've done in the past.
I mean, it's right in your face that the cover is a big Bagley Malstat flying heroes scene with Turbo, this female character, flying right towards you, biggest on the cover, and then Namorita and Firestar and Nova in the background.
Because, you know, they had the trading card sets, and, like, they would have different characters, but, like, Star-Lord wasn't getting in there or anything, so, like, how else are you going to find out about some of this stuff, right? So you're just like, oh, this seems like a new character.
Introducing the heroism of Turbo. That's it.
That's the introducing language is what would have made me think it was new.
Now, I'm calling it right here. What we're reading for next time is the history of this character, since it's going to be fun to go through it with you guys. This Turbo character is based off of the Torpedo, who made his start in Daredevil and worked his way through a few other books that we'll reveal next episode. The Torpedo, I happened to pick up those issues of Daredevil off the stands as a kid, so I was right on board from the beginning in a weird way of this, like, D-list character, and anytime he popped up, I was like, ooh, there's the Torpedo, and would check it out. Then to be out of comics for a half a decade, come back for a few years, and then see them try to revive this character as a legacy hero, hey, that's cool.
Well, they also have an insert for the villainy of Cardinal, which I believe, Kevin, wasn't he on your top 10 Marvel villains when we last covered him with the Thunderbolts?
Most definitely top 10. Like, I could tell you everything about the Cardinal. He has wings, he's red, that's probably about it.
And if you drop out the text and the Cardinal insert, this is the cover of the trade, although they recolored it. Not to my liking, and it's no knock against the colorist. I don't know, they went for like a muted sky background and kind of the modern shading and coloring and everything that, I don't know, I like the original better.
I'm kind of surprised they would pick this. You think they would pick a team shot. I mean, I like the cover, but it's not like Turbo's a big draw, but maybe someone will be like, interesting, this looks cool. I don't know.
Yeah, isn't that a weird... first of all, it was a bit of a spoiler when I got the trade, but it also just seemed like a random, like, the only three team members in... Well, it makes me think, I guess she's joining the team in this trade.
Yeah. What's funny about the character is it originally was a male character and blonde to boot, and here it's a female character, which is fine, but it's a brunette. And we know how black hair is depicted in comic books. It's with blue highlights, right? That's the old Superman coloring trick. So you've got the blue highlights of the hair and the blue of her featureless bodysuit of a costume with, you know, no belt, no neck piece, no shoulder cod pieces, no anything other than what's on her shins and forearms. And it all just blends. It's the same blue. It's very odd, but it worked. It's a cool character design. It really is.
She has these turbines on her wrists and feet that allow her to fly and give her wind-based powers. And so far, the character's been using it to rush from New York to Europe for shopping trips.
Like you do.
Which I can totally get. Like I said, I'm glad to see some of these heroes taking advantage of these powers. And she stumbles across a heavily armed boat and the gunfire damages her belongings and she gets out of there because, you know, It's not her problem, and she's not bulletproof.
You don't want to lose all those belongings.
And then we are brought back to the swimming bear, Mr. Kashniev, who was a character who had mercilessly beaten Namorita to within an inch of her life, and she got the revenge armor. You guys remember the Atlantean, you can't wear that armor unless you go beat up your villain thing that they never really did much with.
Yeah, so really far. Can't wear it. Like, no joke, you can't wear it. Like, it's pretty ugly.
To mix it up, who are going to foil the smugglers? Our power team, Nova, Firestar, and Amarita. And this time they're joined by Silhouette as kind of the field leader.
Yeah. So is Let's Bust Some Heads In our new, is that their new catchphrase?
I don't know, but if you want to talk about the boys, the glee that Nova has on his face
totally.
About beating up people is very boys.
Sure is.
They do a weird computer insert analyzing the team, Air Force One to Air Command. And I feel like a dummy because I did not know that Silhouette had enhanced speed and strength. I thought she was just like a jet, like train, like Captain America type. So I don't know when that was happened, boys, but did that come as a surprise to you as well?
Probably not, because if someone's really acrobatic and then they throw something like that at you, you're just kind of like, yeah, okay.
Well, it just made me question, like, so wait, is she, like, superpower? Like, how enhanced is her strength? Is she, like, rage or something? I don't know. It seemed a weird thing, but Kevin's able to roll with it.
Yeah.
So I need to learn to roll with it, too.
Go with the flow, Andrew.
And they think they're going to bust up some low-level punks, but the Cardinal makes his debut by firing something at him. Foon, foon, foont, foont.
Yeah, he's not the best here when he starts, like, something happens to him and then he, like, points it out, like, oh, this is how you defeat me. And I'm like, oh no, don't say that.
Yeah, the all red, like, the costume design is very plain armored, is what I'm going to call it. Sort of like the Guardians, but with wings, like, very little guardly. I guess, yeah, guardsmen.
I like how he calls them Guardians all the time.
Yep.
I guess it's like streamline, but it doesn't do a lot for me. It can, you know, obviously there's the red and white guy that goes under the water. I like his outfit.
Yeah.
That's because the wings attach the arms in a more entertaining way. But we get to see some of his arsenal. He has a steel net and he shoots tar balls.
Wow. I mean, you don't want that tar in your eyes?
No, it's fun watching Nova take his helmet off and in the corner pulling all the tar.
I mean, he doesn't have the plexiglass things there like Tony Stark.
Well, he forgot to. He has to command all that stuff, I think.
Oh.
Like when he goes underwater in space, he tells it to seal it off and everything.
And yeah, we see. Yeah, swearing like usual.
These faces are great.
Yes. Like I said, his anger at pulling the tar off and everything. And that leads us to our new Torpedo, who. I really thought this would be a great place for a little editor note. Like, Torpedo, a woman? Check out, you know, that sort of thing.
The last time the Torpedo appeared, though, it was in ROM.
Oh, so they're like nuts to Parker Brothers. I get it. Who doesn't have a vendetta against Parker Brothers?
If they even knew who held the rights to ROM at this point, right?
So she reads about the exchange and feels that maybe she should have done more. And so she's going to see about, you know, those new warriors, they're young people, but they don't hide away. We're going to use our powers for good.
Change the world.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out. So, I don't... Again, I like the ideas here, but I don't know the execution of... Namorita's the source of the information, but the other three, Silhouette, Nova, and Firestar, seem to be giving her a hard time about the information. Yeah. It seemed a little forced, laid out well in the story. I mean, I get the idea, just I don't feel the execution worked.
Agreed.
But we get to see Torpedo in action, and she decides to, you know, head to Long Island and rough up some dock workers. And she's pretty kick butt. She jets in and does like a Dirty Harry thing where she's going to blow a guy's head off.
Whoa.
If he doesn't say. And then that's when the new warriors say, hey, we want to see if you're going to come after us. She's like, I'm not going to come after you. And then Marie's like, then work with us. Or stay of our way. We can't waste any more time. Let's pick up the trail of that truck. And again, I'm thinking, well, why did they wait behind to talk to her? They could have just went after the truck when it left. Like, there's some ideas here. I feel like Fabian maybe he's writing one too many books or something.
Yep.
This needs like a second pass on some of the jumps that are going on.
He's definitely writing more than one book.
Yeah, but they're able to track down the truck somehow, even though they waited to have that exchange with her. And we get to see Silhouette kick some butt. And her new outfit, sort of a black with yellow highlights kind of thing that matches her braces. Yeah, I think it's a fun character. Like, it's cool that she's able to use her equipment that helps her walk as part of a weapon and part of her fighting style. So this leads to the, you know, they're going to bust up the big meeting. And this is where they change their battle cry yet again, Kevin. This time it's warriors take them all down.
Well, this is Namorita's option. So you could have a poll. Like, which one do you like better? Because Namorita's really supposed to be the, I guess, de facto leader. Or well, she likes to think she's the leader.
Yeah. The hot-headed one.
Yeah.
And so it's a big showdown, and she gets her chance to take on the sea urchin, which I'm sure they're formidable creatures, but it just seems so silly that he's called the sea urchin. Like, don't they just do nothing but sit on the ocean floor? But so it's fun watching. So Cardinal is fighting. They blow up the boat, and there's a helicopter. So Turbo's like, "I'll take care of the helicopter. You have to go save the people, because you know you're the water hero."
Right. But Namorita really wants the personal vendetta is against the guy in the helicopter. Yeah. So she's stuck in a position where she's got to trust Turbo to, you know, switch foes, and that they're each going to take care of each other's mark.
Yeah. All I can think about is that Simpsons where they're watching the Knight Rider parody about the boat. There's always a fjord or a river or a lock when you need it. So Turbo successfully takes down the helicopter because wind-based powers in the helicopter. Like, I thought that was pretty cool. She swamps it pretty good, and she's going to help get the people out of it. Meanwhile, Namorita just rips the wings off.
That's so brutal.
In like 2 seconds flat, which seems like, yeah, that he's not presenting as much of a problem.
Not in water. That's and then a she's weird, stronger and faster and more agile, right?
Yes, and super strong, too. And then kind of a weird ending where they tell Turbo, like, hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do, and try not to become a villain. And I'm like, when was there a risk of her becoming a villain? Am I missing? Again,
when
great
she tried
artwork.
To blow that head's guy, that guy's head away.
I don't think she was really going to. Do any of us think that that was what she was going to do?
No. I would more likely Namorita's going to blow some guy's head
exactly
away.
So I feel like I'm liking the new art direction and the storytelling, but some of the logical gaps for me are kind of jumping around a little bit.
Wasn't Namorita then that end speech talking about herself, but projecting it onto Turbo?
Maybe
she was talking about herself going overboard. This whole thing was like the round two, the guy who she went overboard and she wanted to kill him, and it was like a personal revenge and all that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're going to have this one be a shorter one, listeners. I think we're going to put a pin in it. There's been some hot vaccines discussion about where to go next. So I don't want to spoil the illusion, but I thought this was a fun, the transition to the Derek Robertson era, the move to the splitting up of the teams, the fun, the end of the omnibus. All good. I like these a lot. Like I said, more on the strength of the art in this instance. I mean, obviously they work together, blah, blah, blah. Don't come at me with your one is more important than the other. Yeah. I just feel like they're going to need time to kind of settle in. And like I said, I just, from reading a lot of the back matter and everything, I wonder if Fabian is a little overextended on some of this and maybe another pass, or, you know, maybe it's on Danny, the group editor, to, like I said, he had a chance to drop in some footnotes here and there to get people up to speed. So, well,
no worry, true believers. We're going to take you down that rabbit hole to explore the Torpedo's past appearances in his history.
Good, good. Kevin, Steve, thoughts on this small little bridge?
Happy to see the new artwork and the paring down of the team, in a way. I'm not a big fan of Night Thrasher, as I've said in the past, so to have some adventures of with a smaller cast has been enjoyable.
Oh, I'm so all in. Like, he's reading these characters, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I know these guys. This is good. This is good stuff.
Cool.
This is comic books.
That it is.
Marvel Comics.
Nice, nice. Well, until then, listeners, take them down. Wait, is that the one we picked? I forgot which one we voted on.
Or don't. You don't have to.
So, did that Deadpool thing that was the Marvel Unlimited that you got the, you know, VIP invitation to, did that ever happen?
Yes, of course. You could buy tickets, Steve. It was a thing, and it was long. Like, it wasn't just like some half hour long thing. We were clocking in at 2 hours. I'm like, how long is this thing gonna go? Like, this is feature film length.
What exactly was the event?
Well, the funny thing is, like, they tell you a time, but it actually started before the time, because they had like drawings, a sketch. It was sort of like how they have those kind of things, right? At your cons, where someone's just there, like on an overhead or whatever, just drawing. It was sort of like that type of.
Yeah, they had Ryan Stegman,
show,
I believe, doing a warm up sketch.
Yeah.
And so he was making comments while he sketched it. It felt very much in the realm of these online conventions now.
Yeah, but I sort of try to separate my experience, because I'm like, I'm probably enjoying this way more than I should, because it's been a long time since I've been to a con. I stopped going to like certain Marvel panels at cons, because I'm like, there wasn't going to be any announcements, and it was like a set format. But I don't know, this kept my interest, and it was kind of exciting. I'm like, I haven't been to a con, I haven't like been to a panel in forever. So
is that what this was, like a Deadpool panel?
Yeah, sort of. But oh, cool. They kept on, see, since it's like video and everything, they keep on, they went through like all the decades of Deadpool, so they kept on bringing in more and more and more creators from like every different era. So like people that you've never saw on a panel or had never come to your area for a con, you got to see them.
Oh, well, that's
neat. And then they're like, there's a bookcase or whatever behind them, and they're in some tropical forest, and you're like, what is happening there? Well, they were talking about their specific era Deadpool that they were a part of.
Yeah, it started with an interview of Rob Liefeld, and then in between each of these decade breaks, they would have a little quiz feature. This was all hosted on YouTube, so you could make comments if you wanted in the little chat box next to it.
It was funnier, Andrew, that we had a whole thing going back and forth, but it was not in the chat box.
No, we had a side conversation not to be shared with. And then one of the...
Rob.
Yeah, well, my beef is more, I feel like Marvel I watch enough of their online stuff, and they have a few hosts, and I feel like sometimes they're trying to push the hosts as much as the, like, where they're our gateway or whatever. And most of the time, no offense to them, but I want less of them and more of Rob or the people. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't. Yep. I'm not here. Like, and it's not a knock against Agent M. Like, I've seen him at events. Like, he's a nice guy, but he's not the way. So, less of them, more of Rob. And then, like Kevin said, each decade, 90. So, they'd bring four people in, I think, for that one. And then they'd go for a while. And then quizzes. And then the aughts. And then the tens. And then they announced the red, white, and black. Black and white and red Deadpool book that's coming out. At the end, CB came on. Yeah. But yeah, so it was fun. But as Kevin said, I don't think I'd ever seen Daniel Way on a panel. And he was one of the guys that was featured. So it was interesting. And like, good value for money guests too, like Jerry Dugan, if you like him. I mean, if you don't, then you're screwed. But, you know, him and Brian Posehn are funny guys. You know, like they do humor for a living. So I feel like they're always safe guests because they can... Yeah. Have funny stuff to say.
You say safe guests, and then they're like, well, we're going to make a Dead Mothers Club or something.
Well, I mean, safe as in entertaining.
Could we be saying that?
Not safe as in they're not going to say bad things, but safe as in, you know, it's not sometimes, and I think that's why they always pick four creators, so that if somebody's a little bit not up on their game, they have some entertainment. But Fabian was there in that, yeah, the 90s. Yeah. So, just a lot of Gail Simone. I think I've listed a bunch of them for me. And like I said, it's not like I'm the biggest Daniel Way. I just had never seen. So that's what I like about the online stuff is sometimes you see these people that for whatever reason, you've just never seen them on a panel.
Yeah. And they gave Rob a quite a big spot. So it was funny to see him,
rightly so,
so enthused about Deadpool being around all these years, and then to see him meltdown on Twitter hours later.
He was unhappy.
So that was an interesting before and after thing. It was just, you know.
Yeah, he seems pretty. I mean, he had some sketches and stuff.
Yeah,
some,
yeah. That was the other interesting thing. Like, it wasn't just them like a talking heads, like he was just like, and here's my, let me just reach into my tickle trunk here, and he pulled out like original like sketches of like, here's where I created Deadpool, and here's the Shatterstar. You can tell like there's, I think some of this was from Marvel Age, but some of it was also like some of the roughs from pages from that New Mutants issue. And it wasn't just him doing that. Like, writers were pulling out, here's the script. So it was interesting. Like, I've never seen some of this stuff before.
I just happened to have it right here. I never travel with it, but because I'm home.
I know, it was so hilarious. I can't believe they were just pulling out reference.
But, yeah, I mean, it was, they sent a feedback survey to me, and basically it was like, yeah, I like this. Like I said, less on the host, more on the talent. I mean, it is weird just watching it on the screen. And the trivia was fun. Look, they needed a break to, like, set up the video for the next four people and all that stuff. So it was fine. Like, you need a filler. You know, why not ask questions, or you could show artwork. And they had some artists on as well. People that drew the book. So it was all of, I mean, I'm not a big Deadpool guy, I guess is the problem. But it was good to see a focus on the comics. Although I will say, Rob doesn't really talk about anybody he was working with on the book that much. Very much seemed like a one-man operation in some ways.
Joe Kelly was there. So that was the other thing that I was excited by. Oh, and then I was thinking, if you could have got Christopher Priest, like that would have been pretty cool. But they covered pretty much like every main era creator pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a fun thing. I don't know how much I would recommend. Like, if they end up posting it and you're a big Deadpool fan, why not? But I don't know that I would go out of my way to cancel big plans in the evening.
Yeah. I told Ench that I was nostalgic for classic Deadpool after going through that whole thing.
Nice. All right, that's another episode in the can to be sent off to the Museum of Comics Podcasting. Thanks, as always, to Andrew and Kevin for joining in this episode. Wouldn't be any fun without them. Next time, we'll hold a Recent Reads roundtable and explore just who that torpedo chap was. So, until Ebony's litter box isn't changed, make mine Marvel. Later.